one of America's fastest growing companies. What went wrong? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. The sudden shutdown of Silver State Helicopters on Sunday, followed by a bankruptcy filing on Monday, has meant sudden unemployment for hundreds of instructors, financial catastrophe for many students, and will also impact at least one lawsuit against the company. Today, we'll complete ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell's conversation with Florida attorneys Ed Booth and Don Majewski, who've been involved in legal action against the company. A common student complaint about Silver State was the promise of placement after graduation in an industry with few jobs for low-time pilots.
Well, the one thing I can tell you in no uncertain terms, and just to throw my bona fides out there, I'm a commercial helicopter pilot. I'm also a CFI helicopter and have been for quite a long time. I'm afraid to think of how long it's been. I did my training through a conventional 141 school, although I flew under 61 with a fellow by the name of Larry DeRocher, who at one time was the HAI Helicopter Instructor of the Year and one of the most principled guys I'd ever met, and came up the right way through the ranks, although my helicopter commercial was an add-on to my already obtained fixed-wing ratings. This whole industry, I've been watching it for years. I've been flying helicopters now for decades. And this whole, you know, jobs around every corner, man, it's not there. It's just not there. With the amount of people, let's just take we're near Jacksonville, Florida. This is where, of course, Ed, your practice is located. And there was a facility there up at off of Craig Field, as I recall. And they had how many students in line there at this time?
We understand there were around 68 students enrolled in one form or another at the Silver State Craig Airport location.
Ed, there can't be six real helicopter jobs in northern Florida open right now for anybody even approaching coming out of a school with maybe a ink-wet CFI ticket. It's absolutely ludicrous to think anything else.
And they're competing against some very experienced and seasoned military pilots coming back from places like Iraq and Afghanistan.
Especially in a military town like Jacksonville.
Exactly.
And Jim, as someone who's had the pride and pleasure of attending helicopter training school with the United States Army, I can tell you that when Ed and I get calls from these people, we're immediately shaking our heads, wondering why anyone like Silver States would plant these visions of sugar plums in these kids' heads, telling them they're going to get jobs. I remember when I got off active duty, I was approached by several people to be a commercial helicopter pilot because I had tons of hours. And as you and Ed and I know, it takes time in any profession to get to a level of competence where you are sought within your area of expertise. And there's no way, shape, or form that these kids are ever going to get the proper training. Ed's got a gentleman that called him recently who's a retiree from the military who said, geez, this sounds like a great second career. I've got a retirement with the Navy. I'm going to become a helicopter pilot. And he's now calling Ed, seeing if Ed can represent him because they basically took his money and didn't give him any training.
And here's one other very difficult part for me to stomach. As I understand it, these kids, or in some cases not kids, people looking for a second career, are not only stuck, they're really stuck. These are obligations that cannot be discharged through personal bankruptcy. In other words, even though they've been, you'll excuse the old military term, screwed, blued, and tattooed on this deal, they're stuck with the bill, and even if they declare personal bankruptcy, they're still stuck with the bill, correct?
That's the ultimate irony of this, Jim, that Silver State is able to go into federal district court in Nevada and file for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, discharge their debts, liquidate their limited assets, yet the students who bought into this dream do not have the same privilege.
There's something wholly inequitable about that.
It's difficult to comprehend, but that is exactly what has happened to this group of students.
Well, I can tell you, we've talked to a couple of legislators, folks both in state and national office in the last 72 hours, and they're not real thrilled with this. I'm hoping there's going to be some action and eventually some relief, because this affects, if the estimates are true, this affects thousands of students.
Oh, it does, and we have reason to believe that a lot of these student loan accounts were charged before the training was completed or offered. In other words, the gentleman I spoke of who had a $55,000 loan and only received 15 hours of training, there's something not proper or decent about that. He certainly owes them for the fair market value of 15 hours of helicopter training, but he ought to have a refund of the money. But, you know, now Silver State's in bankruptcy court, and that will certainly subject them to a high level of scrutiny as to their assertions of their limited assets and huge liabilities.
Isn't there some responsibility on the part of these federal lending programs, the institutions that are part of those programs, that they're lending money in good faith against processes and programs that have legitimate aims, legitimate goals, and legitimate programs by which to pursue them? Isn't there some kind of responsibility on their part to just rather than say, hey, if you're stupid enough to go for this, you can get stuck with it?
Oh, I think there is. Unfortunately, they didn't exercise that responsibility until, to use Silver State's own press release, until last October. It appears that one of the straws that caused this house of cards to come crashing down was the refusal of these lending agencies to write any more student loans, effective last October or November.
But doesn't that indicate finally that somebody knew that something was wrong, and why didn't everybody else?
Well, I think so, but you have to look at this with a backdrop of the whole subprime lending crisis that began to emerge about the same time, of loaning money to people who cannot possibly repay it.
Understood, yeah.
Although most of those loans could be discharged in bankruptcy court, these students, with these being federally back student loans, cannot use the bankruptcy courts for relief.
Well, here's the big question. Ed, Don, I'm going to ask you a big favor here. I want you to imagine for a moment that you're one of these students. What do you do now?
Before I pull my hair out or after? And it's a rhetorical question, but a damn good one, and I think I want Ed to respond as well. I think the first thing to do is to seek someone out who can assist in answering the questions about liability for payment of the loan when there is no training being tied to future payments. That's very troubling. As you know, a school loan, a true school loan, is not made if the student is not in school, and that's what we have here. So, traditionally, the lending agency should forego any further payment or obligation on the part of the person who took the loan. However, and I'm going to let Ed pipe in here, because of the nature of this agreement, it's not dischargeable, and you can't escape from it. Ed?
Oh, exactly, Don. These students are in a real predicament. As far as what they should do, Jim, I think they should complain loudly and often to any government agency that will listen to them. This would include perhaps calling the local police on the non-emergency number and asking to file a police report for fraud, theft, whatever comes to mind. Contact the state attorney general, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, any state agency that will listen to them would be a productive use of these students' resources. They might want to consult with a qualified bankruptcy attorney to see what their legal options are. They want to stay in touch with each other so that resources discovered by one student can be made available to the other. I know they formed some informal networks over the internet, and I hope they will continue to do that, but I think the more noise they make to government agencies that are in a position to do something, the better.
We'll be back to continue our discussion of last weekend's sudden closing of Silver State Helicopters in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. ANN's editor-in-chief, Jim Campbell, is discussing the sudden closing last weekend of Silver State Helicopters with Ed Booth and Don Majewski, board-certified aviation law attorneys in Jacksonville, Florida. It may take years or even decades for former students of Silver State to dig themselves out of financial holes. But what can the rest of us learn from this going forward?
Doesn't this suggest that something needs to change in the system overall?
Well, my recommendation has always been, Jim, to pay for flight training as you go. Take a lesson, write a check. Take your next lesson, write another check. The flight schools will typically offer you a discount, sometimes as much as 20%, if you buy a package, a private pilot package, an instrument rating package. I have spoken to too many people during my legal career who have received letters from bankruptcy courts halfway through their training saying that, in effect, their money is lost. So the number one rule, in my opinion, is that pay for your flight training as you go.
And, Jim, I'd just like to pipe in. Ed and I are both very pro-military. I couldn't afford this when I wanted to be a pilot. Ed was in a little bit better position. He was an attorney. He was making very good money. He had a good career. So he had available cash flow to pay for flight lessons. I didn't. And some of us poor kids who come from blue-collar families knew that the military was the only way we were going to get flight training. And fortunately, we got the best training in the world. Now, we had to pay back the military with years of service, which was actually a delight. But I'm seeing a lot of people nowadays going towards the military because they know they're going to get the training if they're qualified and if they stick with the program and don't wash out. And they know that the only thing they've got to do is give back time. And the great thing about that is while serving their country, they're building hours and experience, and so they are marketable when they get out. But, Jim, you recall in post-Vietnam, when we got out of the Vietnam conflict, helicopter pilots were a dime a dozen because of the glut of warrant officer pilots that were extremely well qualified coming out of the service and basically not being able to find a job.
Yeah, that was a horrific set of circumstances at the time, and I don't know that this isn't kind of an artificially induced scenario in which the same thing has happened. We've got a glut of people out there and not enough jobs, and once again, going back to the claims made by Silver State, the jobs were never there that they claimed were there to begin with.
They also claimed, I believe, Jim, that they had a larger training operation for helicopters than the U.S. Army.
Oh, boy, yeah.
That was part of their marketing that we reviewed. Jim, before I forget, one very important thing that these students should do, and that is to contact the lending institution, the agency that wrote the student loan, and give them instructions not to release any more money to Silver State. You could actually have a situation here where the student loan guarantor could have his or her money released to the bankruptcy trustee to be used in the claim settlement process. So I think it's imperative that these students immediately contact the bank or whatever agency they borrowed the money from and instruct them not to release another dime to Silver State, to the bankruptcy trustee, or anyone.
That's excellent advice, Ed, and we'll make sure we pass that on as well. Gentlemen, you guys have been very kind with a fair amount of your time, and thank God I'm not paying your billables on this one. But seriously, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the time you're taking to this and the passion you brought to this. Ed, I've known you for a long time, and we've talked about a number of things that you've worked on. While the legal profession at times, justifiably or unjustifiably, takes a fair amount of flack, this is one situation where the law properly executed might be able to bring a great deal of relief and prevent future tragedies. And I hope that the work that you've started will allow for that and see some positive result.
We hope so, Jim. We've been trying hard for these two families, and what we've uncovered has hopefully saved some lives.
Well, it's all we can ultimately hope for. Now our thoughts are going to have to go with the hundreds and probably thousands of people that are either out of work or out of luck or otherwise affected. And I have to tell you, I think this is going to have an absolutely chilling effect on the entire flight training community. I think we have just begun to see the fallout of things that are going to require significant changes and change the landscape of how career-oriented pilot training is conducted from here on out.
Yeah, I agree, Jim, and I would encourage the students and their parents, because their parents are part of this process, to ask a lot of questions, to visit the facilities, to take a look at the equipment that their sons and daughters are going to be training in, and ask questions about maintenance and who does it and how often. Because one of the additional tragedies of the Silver State bankruptcy is many of these students were required to have their parents co-sign on these loans. So the parents of these students are also obligated and cannot discharge the obligation in bankruptcy either.
Well, and as I understand it, the young woman who was killed in the R-44 accident, her sister is now on the hook for the loans that for the training that ultimately led to her death?
That's correct. Her sister was a co-signer. They generally will not write these student loans without a parent or other adult co-signing.
Now, that's insult to injury, isn't it?
And again, anyone that's contemplating a career in flight training or has their son or daughter doing that, again, should ask a lot of questions. And there's nothing wrong with paying by the week, paying by the month. There's absolutely no reason to go out and encumber yourself for 20 years to train for a career that just might not be there.
I'm going to do something I rarely do. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever done it when I've talked to attorneys on cases like this. For those who might be affected within your area, how can they get a hold of you guys?
We have a website, Jim, zisser.net. Z as in Zulu, ISSER.net. You can find out a little bit more about the aviation experience of this firm and how to get in contact with us. Zisser.net.
Well, as I said, I've known you, Ed, for quite some time, and I can recommend you, and specifically wholeheartedly, both ethically and professionally. But there are going to be people adversely affected by this, and I've got a feeling, especially with the expertise that you already have in pursuing this so far, that you're going to be in a position to lead the way in a couple of areas. So it might be a good place for people to start and see what they can do from here on out.
We'd be happy to talk to them, and we'll do what we can to help them, Jim.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. I wish it was under better circumstances, and somewhere down the line, we got to find something pleasant to talk about.
Thank you for allowing us to appear on AirNews.net.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Appreciate it.
Take care, gentlemen. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Jim. Talk to you soon.
Jim Campbell is ANN's editor-in-chief. Ed Booth and Don Majewski are board-certified aviation law attorneys with the firm Zisser, Robison, Brown, Nolis, and Majewski, PA, in Jacksonville, Florida. Find more details at www.zisser.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.